How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 28 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can also leave a review if you're feeling like it also. Make sure to listen to the show on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I was doing every weekday. Now I've moved it to Tuesdays and Thursdays during the dead part of the offseason. Going to be going back to that every weekday model once the season starts to pick up around mid-September-ish. I'll let you know those dates when I know them. The next show, I've got a couple of really fun guests scheduled. I don't want to give them away right now just in case something falls through, but it's two guys from one of my favorite NBA podcasts, so you can tune into that once it's out Thursday morning. Today, though, let's talk about Russell Westbrook. It's just me. I'm sorry if you like the guests more than me. You're just going to have to deal with me today. I will answer some Twitter questions after that. So Russell Westbrook re-signed with the Thunder. I'm just telling you that just in case you're living under a rock or a place where the internet doesn't exist or whatever it is. Russell Westbrook renegotiated and extended his contract in Oklahoma City last week. He'll be in town for at least another year after he added a couple of seasons onto the deal. The latter one is a player option. It was originally supposed to expire at the end of this year. He was supposed to become a free agent in 2017. Now he can't become a free agent until 2018 at the earliest. It'll be 2019 if something goes terribly wrong and he ends up having to pick up that player option. I already did some immediate reaction to this. You can head out to normantranscript.com and check my blog. That's Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, and you can read more about it there. I also had Royce Young on the podcast last Thursday, right after the news broke. We talked about Russ. We talked about Thunder stuff. We talked about other stuff. Royce is always a great guest to have on. You can listen to that in the archives on iTunes or on audioboom.com. Today, I kind of wanted to discuss the way we perceive Russ, though, or more kind of the way we perceived his signing. We've got a few days or almost a week removed now from Russell Westbrook Day, and some of the reaction has been interesting because about a year ago, people thought Kevin Durant was probably more likely to re-sign with the Thunder than Westbrook was. You ask pretty much any random person in August, September of 2015, hey, who do you think is more likely to re-sign, Russ or KD? You're going to get KD as the answer almost every single time. And it wasn't just random fans either. And it wasn't just uninformed people. Or should I say, it wasn't just people who were uninformed about basketball. It wasn't people who didn't know basketball. It was people in the league thought this was going to happen. Not necessarily that Kevin Durant was definitely going to stay, or that Russell Westbrook was definitely going to go. They just thought that if one was going to leave and one was going to stay, it was going to be the reverse of the way it actually happened in real life. But it wasn't people who know Russell Westbrook all too well. And that's the thing. We're all ignorant in a sense. We all have to define what we know too well, because in the end, only one of us is Russell Westbrook. Believing that Westbrook was definitely gone is probably the most extreme example of a trait almost everyone, and myself included, often shows when evaluating free agency. We project our ideals onto another person. And if it's not that, we judge a person based on public appearances, and we go with that. And Westbrook has this kind of vainglorious aura. He's always dressed in pants that would be tight on a peacock, and the pants are even brighter than the peacock itself. He's from LA. He's a bit prickly when people like me talk about things or ask him about things, and he doesn't want to talk about them or answer them or whatever it is. So many assume that he's cold. And in many's perception, leaving the only franchise you've ever played for is a cold move to do. So people thought KD is mostly soft-spoken, except for a few occasions with the media and in public. Russ is a little more hard-nosed. Westbrook would be the one to go if either actually did, and that's that. But that's our perception. It's not actually reality. Westbrook kind of has two personalities. He's got the, and I'm not the first person to really talk about this. He's got the one he uses, you know, that turns me into an internet meme on a weekly basis. He's also got the one he doesn't use with the media. Because let's be real, there are people in this world that Russell Westbrook cares about more than me and Barry Trammell. I can promise you that. And with those people, just about everyone says that he's a sweetheart. People who he works with the Thunder, it's his teammates, it's his family, whomever else. And this is the real Russell Westbrook. This is the Russell Westbrook that you get for more than 5 minutes on a Thursday after practice when he's sweaty and he's tired and he doesn't really care about talking to me or anybody else in the media. And he gives those one-word answers that kind of make my columns a little bit tougher to write. But in the end, who cares? I still get to talk to Russell Westbrook and I think of a fun way to write a column anyway. And I'm not arguing that it takes a sweetheart to stay or that it takes the villain to go. That's kind of the easy narrative. It's something that's going to build naturally, for sure. It just will. It's not true. It's a fabricated storyline, but it's going to build. That's the way this always works. What I'm saying is building these opinions off Westbrook's public appearances and judging off those, it's not actually an accurate way to judge someone's character pretty much ever. It's just the easiest way for us to do it because, quite frankly, it's our only access to the personality. Some guys, some public figures, and this extends beyond athletes, are super genuine in their public appearances. Steven Adams is what he is. You see Steven Adams, that dude's just like that. He's just funny and cheery, and that's his personality. And he's an intense guy, but that is Steven Adams' personality. Russell Westbrook saves his real personality for people other than the media, and that's fine. That's fine, but it does make it a little bit tougher to judge maybe what his priorities are, what his morals are, what he wants to do with his life. And it's not our right to know that. But it does make it tougher. And it does make it harder for us to figure out what the heck he's going to do. You know, somebody told me before Durant even left for Golden State. This might have been even before I was even covering the Thunder. It might have been when I came over to start covering the Thunder in April of this year. It might have even been before then when I was covering the league as a whole, living in New York. But someone told me that if one of the two were going to leave between Westbrook and Durant, that he thought it would be KD. And he thought that Durant was going to stay. But he also said that Westbrook was more tied to the individuals in the community. And he made a big point of that. I thought it was an interesting point. If you're an unmarried 27-year-old, isn't this the best time in your life to move to another city for a new job? I can't dispute that. I'm almost Durant's age. In concept, I'm his age. And I just did the same thing. I came here to Oklahoma City for a new job. And I'm an unmarried 27-year-old, 26-year-old. I don't even know my own age. And again, none of this is bad or good. It's just what's true. And those sorts of elements, the ones, you know, we think of for regular people but don't always for athletes because they're masked by the public appearances or the press scrums or the press conferences or the trash talking on the court or whatever else it is that we're seeing and is forming our opinions of these people. Those are the things that we consider when we're trying to guess where athletes end up. But there are other aspects too, and those things are often behind the curtain and we're just not seeing them because in the end, they're just like you and me. And that's actually what's driving their decisions.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Some quick Twitter questions before we head out. From Worth Lambert, do you anticipate a basketball strike this year or lockout? What cap rules are needed to help parity in the NBA? Will you catch any Sooner football? Will I catch any Sooner football? Yes, I do plan on catching Sooner football. I don't think I'll be covering it for the transcript. I guess it's possible they throw me on something, you know, if someone can't do something. But I don't think I'll be covering anything. I did go to Mizzou, and I was there when we were in the Big 12. So I've experienced my fair share of Big 12 football throughout college. I rarely ever missed a game. I think I only missed one or two games while I was in college. And I always caught them on TV, watch every year, even though Mizzou is kind of in shambles right now with everything that's going on at that school. But yes, I do plan on going to games. I'm sure it'll be a blast. I've never been to an OU game in Norman. So I'll at the very least end up getting tickets to at least one game and heading to a big game because those games are always fun. Let's talk basketball because that's the fun stuff. Do you anticipate a basketball strike this year? I anticipate that someone's going to opt out of the CBA. For those who are unaware, there's a mutual opt-out in the CBA. Either side, the players or the owners, have the option of opting out of the deal in December. It wouldn't actually take action until the NBA's fiscal year ends. That's at midnight, when the clock strikes midnight on July 1st, 2017. I'm a little bit optimistic that they're not actually going to miss games, but I do think we're going to miss time. I think the offseason is probably going to be pushed back a little bit. There's so much money in the pot right now with that $24 billion TV deal that kicks in for this season. And I think people think that owners are, that both sides are going to be more willing to be compromising because there's more money, because they say, hey, half the money is way more money for us because there's such a larger, there's just so much more revenue coming in. I don't think that's how successful people get rich, though. I think successful people get rich by seeing, hey, there's more money, I want that money, and they pull it off. And that's kind of what a lot of the owners have done. These are successful businessmen for the most part. These are intelligent people with money. And I think that's something that's going to happen. I don't think that they're going to miss games just because I don't think it benefits anybody to miss games. This isn't like 2011. The big difference between 2011 when the owners said they were losing money is that the owners, because they said they were losing money, they were happy to miss out games, because if you're losing money with every game that's played, then you are saving money by not bringing in any revenue. Then you're at the very least, you are if your expenses are larger than your income, then if your profit margins are in the negative, you're okay with not playing basketball. Right now, those profit margins are way in the green. Neither side wants to miss playing basketball games right now. I think they're going to figure something out. I think the fight, you know, people will talk about the fight being parody, and that's part of your question, because that's how they mask it. The fight's always about the money. They said the fight was to make it the small market, to make sure the small markets were viable last time. That's not true. The fight was over the basketball-related income. They brought it down from about 57% to about a 50-50 split. Now, the players are probably going to want some of that money back because they lost 7 percentage points of it last time. The owners are probably going to want some more of it. We'll see how it goes. I don't know how that is going to go, but I do think that the motivation for both sides is not to actually miss games. I think we're going to miss some time in the offseason. I think because of that, free agency will probably get pushed back. But I don't think we're going to end up missing any regular season games because of it. I think there's just too much money on the line if we do actually end up missing regular season games. I don't think parity is that big of an issue. I mean, look, Kevin Durant went to the Golden State Warriors because of a flukish year. It was anomalous, Durant going to the Warriors. The NBA has never had parity like football does. You know, the NFL has parity because it's a 16-game season. I mean, there are other reasons too. But you know what? If the NBA played a 16-game season and single elimination playoffs, then guess what? The best team wouldn't win that often either. Because that's not the best way to figure it out. Everybody knows the larger the sample size, the better chance you have of figuring it out. Baseball has parity because you have a different starting pitcher going every day. You have funky starting pitching matchups going out throughout the season. You can have one versus a five. And a 400 teams one can be better than a 550 teams one. Or it can be better than a 550 teams five. You can end up winning those games. Baseball is also more of a luck-based sport. So in a lower scoring sport, and when you have higher variation of luck and lower scoring, you can end up having a team that's worse winning more. Basketball's not, doesn't have as high a variation of luck. On top of that, one player can dominate the game more. You know, Mike Trout can't have 12 at-bats in a game because he's really good. He's still getting the same amount as your number three hitter on most nights, or your number two hitter, or your number nine hitter, or whatever it is. He's getting the same amount of plate appearances or one more than the rest of the guys. But LeBron James is going to take way more shots. Stephen Curry is going to take way more shots. I don't know if parity is something that's an issue in the league either. I mean, look, people yearn for the days of parity. When were the days of parity? When the Bulls were winning 6 out of 8? When the Lakers were winning, you know, 3 straight with Kobe and Shaq? Or when there were, you know, only 4 teams or 5 teams or whatever it was who made the finals in the entire decade of the 80s? I mean, when was there parity when the NBA was going well? I don't think the league needs parity. Now, I think it needs some semblance of hope, but I don't think it necessarily needs parity. We've never seen that the NBA has needed it to go well. I'm okay with that. You know, the Kevin Durant situation, I don't think that's something that can happen again. I mean, look, yeah, players can team up for sure, but the way that happened cap-wise, if you're going to write something into the CBA to prevent that, I just don't see that happening again. There's a decent chance that this is the largest cap spike we see in a single year ever. And how many times do we see the best player in the league stuck on an $11 million a year contract and a $90 million cap? That ratio? How many times do you see the best player in the league making a ninth of the cap? It doesn't happen. It's so rare. This is something that I don't think something like this is going to happen again. Players can team up. And if players want to team up, they're going to team up. You can't not let them team up. Players want to do that, they're going to do it. But the way it happened, if we're talking strictly financially and not, you know, whether it goes against your basketball morals or not, I just don't think that that's something that's viable that's going to happen. I don't think it's something you can really make a rule against, and I don't think it's something that they should waste their time with in labor negotiations. I think they're going to end up talking. It's mostly going to be about the basketball-related income. There are going to be some other issues, too. You know, they got to work out the weirdness with extensions, and for the most part, players can't sign extensions. I know we saw Harden, and we saw Westbrook. Those are really the first two big-time extensions that we've seen for guys not coming off rookie contracts under the CBA. They got to work that stuff out, and there are other things they have to work out too, but I think the main fight, the thing that people care about, is going to be the basketball-related income, and that's going to be it. Next question from Dr. Swish. Have we underestimated the impact of losing Serge Ibaka, especially shot blocking and altering, and team identity? Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know if how people are evaluating it, I guess. I mean, Serge Ibaka is a really good player. I think Victor Oladipo is a really good player too. Look, Serge Ibaka had a down year last year. Serge Ibaka had a very good year last year, but he had a down year. He was ineffective at times. He wouldn't get the ball in the fourth quarter, and a lot of that wasn't necessarily on Serge Ibaka. His defense was not as good as it was. It was really good, but it wasn't all defense good. It wasn't defensive player of the year good like it had been the previous 3 years. And I do think it's possible the Thunder saw Ibaka had a fall off. Maybe there's another fall-off coming the next year. And Ibaka wants that max deal. And I know the question was not, can you critique the trade? But Ibaka wants that max deal in 2017. Like, he wants that big time. So if the Thunder aren't willing to give that to him from either a financial standpoint or from just a value standpoint, if they don't think he's going to be worth that, and that'll be a mistake because maybe he's not the age he says he is or whatever it is, you know, that's an understandable thing. I think losing Ibaka will hurt them. It'll hurt them defensively. But I don't think they're going to be worse defensively is the thing. I think part of it is that I think Steven Adams is going to be really good this year. I think Steven Adams is going to make up for some of Ibaka's absence. I think Andre Roberson we saw get better throughout last year. Andre Roberson was always a good defender, but there were things he got better at. I mean, he used to be a little bit too weak to guard guys in the post. Like during that San Antonio series, I thought that Kawhi Leonard was just going to be able to post up Roberson and he was going to get either easy buckets in the post or he was going to be able to find guys for threes out of the block or whatever it was. Wasn't the case. Roberson was great against them in the post. He was awesome. And that's something he's gotten a lot better at. There are other things he's gotten better at too. His ability to switch when he guards guys going around screens and pin downs. He's really good at it. He's just really, really good at it. I think they'll be able to make up for this. They're going to play a different defensive style. I mean, I've been saying over and over again, I think they're going to play a really aggressive defense is my guess. That's how I'd play it with this personnel, at least. You have guys whose natural tendencies are to play aggressively at the top, Westbrook and Oladipo. And on the back line, you have a guy in Steven Adams who's one of the best help defenders in the league, and I think he's only going to get better, 23 years old now. I mean, he was incredible in the playoffs. Possible. I mean, he could have All-Star in his future. I don't see why not. He could have All-NBA or All-Defense in his future. I don't see why not. It's possible. Maybe not this year. I don't know if that's a fair expectation, but it could happen. So, you know, you have those guys making up for mistakes. You have Roberson making up for mistakes. No, Ilyasova is not going to do anything close to what Serge Ibaka did defensively. Not even in his down year last year, but you've got four defenders who you can figure out. And Westbrook did not have a good defensive season last year. Gambled too much, died on too many ball screens, didn't go all out enough to be able to warrant the amount of defensive player, the all defense team votes that he got. I was surprised to see that he got that many. I don't really know how people justified that. But, I mean, he's a tremendous player, and he has to take a huge workload on the offensive end, which certainly has something to do it. But you can now create a defensive scheme that works in Westbrook's tendencies, and they don't have to necessarily be flaws. His ball hawking, Oladipo can do that too. And you can have guys flying into passing lanes. You can have guys gambling, and Adams can be more aware because it's written into the schemes. Robertson can be more aware because it's written into the schemes. These are things that you can do with this roster, I think, and I think it's something, maybe they don't have the most aggressive defense in the league, but I think it's something that they are going to try to do because I think it's just the best way to play it with this personnel. Now, Billy Donovan is about a gazillion times smarter than I am, so he could think of something that works a lot better than me and go with that. And the Thunder may change their defense in the middle of the year last year, so he can choose something and then decide, man, let's scrap it. Go with something else. He's done that. And that's not changing an entire system, but they can change coverages. They can change schemes. They can do whatever. Teams have done that in the middle of the year. They can adjust. That's fine. You know, he's got a roster. He's got to figure out how to mold. Losing Ibaka is a big deal, for sure. It's something that they're going to have to figure out. I think they're going to be able to figure it out, though. I think they've got the roster to be able to figure it out. I think by the end of the year next year, and you know, this defense was not a top 10 defense last year. I think after all this, I think next year they're going to be a top 10 defense. I think next year they're going to be higher ranked in points allowed per possession than they were this past season. I think Adams will be better. I think Robertson will be better. I think Westbrook had his worst defensive season last year. I think he'll bounce back from that. I don't think he like just forgot how to play defense. I actually think Westbrook is going to have a good defensive season this year. I think Oladipo is a solid defensive player. He's got his flaws, but he's certainly above average defensive player. And his defensive potential is fantastic. If Donovan can tap into that, I mean, he has the potential to be a great defensive player. There are a lot of defensive pieces on this team. I think they're going to end up being higher ranked defensively than they were last year. And because of that, I think it's hard to say that losing Ibaka is a huge deal on defense. While it absolutely has an impact and they have to change things and they have to work around it and they have to be smart, I think it's hard to say that losing Ibaka is the biggest deal when Ibaka is your main defensive presence and the defense could potentially get better. Now, if I'm wrong on the defense, then I'm wrong on Ibaka. But I don't think I am. I think this is going to be a good defense. I think it's going to be a really solid, physical, intelligent, aggressive defense this year. From Dave Abbott, without he who shall be named on the team, how will the offense look? Lots of pick and roll, drive and dish, etc. You know, I think Donovan's got a few options. I think there's going to be more motion. You got to find ways to get space for Westbrook and Oladipo in driving lanes. That's the thing. Because that's how they're going to score. You won't be able to do much with the shooting. There's not much shooting on the roster. There's Morrow, there's Abrines, there's Ilyasova. Nobody else is really an above-average shooter for their position on this team from three-point. So you got to create space. The most common way to create space is with shooting. You put guys around the perimeter, and defenders have to guard them. Because of that, there's more space in the middle of the floor for a guy like Westbrook or a guy like Oladipo to attack the basket. Another way to create space is with motion off the ball. Player movement. Maybe that's, you know, running floppy sets for Abrines, running them off pin downs, or maybe it's you know, kind of stuff they did in the playoffs, setting, you know, off those kind of screens for backdoor cuts for Robertson, or you know, Robertson running around setting flare screens and you know, those sorts of actions they ran in the playoffs. Maybe that's something they try more. But you got to figure out a way to create spacing and get a defense moving other than shooting, because I don't think the shooting is going to be there for them to do it. Now, you can do it. You can find ways to create space. It's just tough. You can space from the inside out, too. I mean, look, Steven Adams can be a floor spacer without stepping out of the paint. If Steven Adams becomes such a dangerous pick-and-roll threat with Russell Westbrook that when he sets a screen and rolls to the basket, guys collapse in on him, that's a floor spacer. It's an inside-out floor spacer. It's a guy who, instead of spacing guys out, is pulling guys in. But he's got gravity. There are a lot of pick-and-roll threats. That's what their big thing is. They don't need to touch the ball to create gravity. And all of a sudden, you know, Victor Oladipo is not a great shooter, but if he's wide open because his man came off of Steven Adams, you know, kick to him for a wide open catch and shoot three. That's cool. That'll work a lot. That's going to be a super efficient shot if he's wide open. So I think that's something they're going to try to do. I do think they're going to use Adams more as a creator out of the pick and roll. I don't think it's something they're going to do all the time. But I do think it's something they're going to try. You know, get the ball to him on those short rolls, let him pass out of those a little bit more, maybe go one dribble to the hoop. I think he's a good passer. I think that's something he'll be able to do. He's more skilled. And I think with Kevin Durant gone, the ball is going to have to be, you know, in the hands of other guys a little bit more, because it used to be, you know, Kevin and Russ and everybody else. Now, it can't just be just Russ. You can't just have one guy. If you have one guy and no one else touches the ball, you know, you're the Iverson 76ers. People talk about, well, the Iverson carried the 76ers to the finals. No, he didn't. They were a really good defense. They weren't a great offense that year. I think they were top half of the league, but they weren't a really good offense. They won because they had Mutombo and Ratliff and really good defensive players. And their defense carried them there. You can't have a guy who is only got the ball and that's it. So I think they're gonna, you know, other guys are gonna touch the ball more. I think one of those guys might end up being Steven Adams, and I think he's gonna earn those touches. And offensive rebounding is gonna help that offense too. And that's not something you write into the way that you run your offense, but it is something that's gonna affect their efficiency. You know, I think Kanter's a really good offensive rebounder. Adams is going to be able to do it. We saw in the playoffs what they can do with offensive rebounding. You know, the entire league zigged. The Thunder zagged a little bit. Offensive rebounding has been really, really, really not really a priority in the league anymore. You know, we saw, you know, Doc Rivers Celtics teams basically give up on offensive rebounding and say the transition defense is way more important than offensive rebounding. And tons of other teams have followed. The Spurs do it. When the Spurs do it and Doc Rivers does it and everybody else starts doing it and all of a sudden you got something. Hawks don't offensive rebound. Lots of teams. They don't really care about it. They just get back in transition. The Thunder, they fight for offensive rebounds. And that's something that's got to be hard for a coach to enforce. You know? Enforcing when it's smart to go after offensive rebounds as opposed to when to go back in transition and make sure you don't give up an easy bucket on the other end. That's got to be tough. And I think that's something we talked about how a lot throughout the playoffs, about how the Thunder, they gave up a lot of buckets in transition throughout the playoffs, even though they were playing great basketball. If the one, you know, the critique of them was, is in the parts of the Spurs series, parts of the Warriors series, they gave up easy transition buckets sometimes. Maybe when you can argue with first look, maybe they shouldn't have. But it's because they were going for so many offensive rebounds. You can't necessarily pull in a ton of offensive rebounds, make offensive rebounding a priority, and then get back for every single transition look. It's not going to happen unless you're superhuman. That's just hard. I think that's too much to ask of a team. So that's something that's a line they're going to have to tread, and I think Donovan's a good coach, and obviously he's incredibly aware of managing that, but it's going to be tough. All right, as always, I'm running on Tuesdays and Thursdays until about mid-September when I jump back to the daily format. If you're subscribed to the show, you'll be good on getting all those. Remember, you can head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. If you have any questions or comments, you can hit us up on audioboom.com. The show is right on there as well. Or you can email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out Thunder Road, my blog there, to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you Thursday with a couple of good guests. It's going to be talking Team USA as well as Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.